My name is Jarrell Wilson, and I currently live in Denton, Texas. I go to the University of North Texas and study sociology with a minor in psychology. And my home is in Round Rock, Texas, right outside of Austin. I am a gay black man living in the South, and I am a Christian. I feel like I'm one of a kind, although I know that's not necessarily true. I feel very much like the only fish in the sea right now, at least with all of these colors on me, so to speak. It's interesting being a sexual minority and black in and of itself is very complicated. Black people in general tend to have this own culture about them. They are very, very much their own island. When I go and visit my family, we speak a different language than I speak with my friends up here. We understand each other in a different way. To be black is to be a part of this experience, this shared collective suffering and oppression, but also this shared community. I'm walking down the street, a black person I've never seen before will just smile and talk to me, ask me how my family's doing as if they know who I am. And in a lot of ways, they do. And it's interesting being a part of that. But the problem with the black community is they don't leave it open for other communities. And to be gay is to be a part of that, a different community. It's to have a different language. I talk to gay people differently than I do to people that aren't gay. And for most people that are Caucasian, it's not really an issue. They can be gay and white and it's all right. But to be gay and black, there's conflict there. And there doesn't need to be, but the thing that minority groups have issues with is working together. For the Hispanic community and the black community, Jews and blacks and, I don't know, aliens, all of us tend to focus more on our differences than on how we're alike. And it causes a deep tension. So just being gay and black is very unsettling in and of itself. And then if you add Christian on top of that, it adds a whole nother, I don't even know how to say it, a whole different experience to life. It's fun. It's very fun. I really feel that people try and put identities into boxes a little too much. Now, I understand the need for stereotyping. It's a very biological thing. We stereotype fungi as all being dangerous, even though we know that we consume it in yogurt and consume it in other things. But for the most part, if we see fungus, we avoid it. We don't consume it. It's a healthy stereotype. Bacteria, fungus, okay, we can go bacteria, but there's a type of fungi in yogurt. Isn't that fun? And naturally you think, ew, no fungi. But no, it's interesting that we, for bacteria as well, there's bacteria in our mouths that helps us digest. But for the most part, if we see this kills bacteria, we grab it. We don't want bacteria. We know that it's bad. It's a good stereotype for us. But the problem with stereotyping people is stereotyping people doesn't always work out that way. Saying all black people are violent and aggressive cuts you off from the very friendly, nice black people that will add to your life. Saying all Mexican Americans are undocumented workers, they're all just trying to get a free ride, it's a lie, it's not true. But these stereotypes have become almost like scripture in the American psyche, and it's dangerous. And for a lot of people, when we try and combine different identities, such as gay, black, and Christian, we throw in the baggage we have with these words into what we think about this person. And it stresses people out. And balancing all of these identities is also stressful because you don't want to be the stereotypical this or the stereotypical that. You want to be you. I just want to be Jarrell. And so I do get overwhelmed carrying gay, black, Christian I do get overwhelmed at times, but I also, as a Christian, have to find joy in it. Because there's so much beauty to be found in all of these identities. I love the gay community. I don't think there is another community in the world more accepting, more loving. It's like an overwhelmingly large family. If I run into a gay person in Africa, it's like running into a long-lost cousin. It's a giant family. And the same thing with being a Christian. I'm walking down the street, and if I have my Methodist cross and flame on, someone will stop and say, "You're a Methodist? What church do you go to? Maybe we know somebody." It's knowing that you are at home no matter where you are. And I love it. And the same thing with being Black. And so I try and stay happy, try and stay joyful, even in the midst of struggling in a society that is not welcoming of two-thirds of my identity, by just remembering the similarities, remembering that I do have a home, that I am loved, that for some reason God wants me to be this way. Peace to me can't really be explained in words. When I think of the word peace, I get this image of a really loud waterfall, and the water just keeps moving downstream until it comes to this beach with white sand and clear water. And for me, I find peace everywhere. In church, I'm the only person, I think, that really enjoys listening to babies scream and cry in the middle of service. I just find peace in hearing that there's new life in a place that's filled with old people and with middle-aged people and college students and elementary school kids running around that can't sit still. I find peace in other people and in wind blowing through trees and grass and dogs coming up and licking your face when you just washed it. I find peace in really random situations. And for me, peace is something that we find within ourselves. It can't be found outside. You can't go searching for it and then one day you, "Here's my peace." It's not just going to pop up. Peace comes from knowing who you are. It comes when you realize that no matter what you look like, you are beautiful. It comes from knowing that the same beauty that you have, all of humanity has. It's really like working out. I hate physical exercise. I'm so not a fan of it, but I still do it. I still get up and I go. And I go to the rec and I watch all of these really attractive people showing off all sorts of ungodly amounts of skin. And I get on my treadmill and I start just jogging and I'm like, I hate this. And in the same way, that's how we work on our inner peace. That's how we convince ourselves. We have to wake up and every day decide, I'm going to find the beauty that is within me. So my biggest obstacle to peace, I think, is a lack of understanding. And so I try to understand more. And that's why I actually enjoy coming to college campuses. Most of the stuff I've learned about life, I've learned from talking to other people. Only in college do you get someone from Burundi and Eritrea and Thailand and China and Japan and Arkansas, all in one room. It's really interesting. The person that was raised in the southern town with no people of color end up going to class and meeting somebody from the other side of the world that they can't even locate on a map. And then they become friends after they've been told all of these stereotypes about people in the outside world. They're all like this. Be afraid of them. And then you meet them. And your entire world changes. When we share our personal experience with others, it makes our stories more viable. I can read CNN writing about Malala in Pakistan and how she was shot fighting for education, and then she was moved to the United Kingdom for medical treatment. And I can read all of these facts about her. She's 15 years old. She has long dark hair and brown eyes, and she's got tan skin. But what does that really mean? It doesn't mean anything, but to hear her speak about how important education is, it's inspirational. To watch video footage of this girl in a hospital bed saying, I'm not going to give up fighting until every girl in my nation has education. I'm not going to stop. I don't care how many times they shoot me. That is, it's personal. And it's not just personal for her. It becomes personal to the people that hear her. I like to refer to it as back when I was straight, I was told all sorts of interesting stories about gay people and how innately evil they are. And then I met one. The first out gay person I ever met, it was my freshman year, I don't even remember her name, and then she was telling me this story about how she was having a bad day, because I just met her and I asked her how her date was going, and she said it was going awful. And I said, well, what's wrong? And she said, well, my parents just kicked me out because I like women. And for me, I was like, oh no, she's evil, what's going on? And I go home and I tell my mother, this girl was just kicked out of her house because she's a lesbian. And what's interesting, my mom is very generous. She's always wanting to give and help out other people. But her first reaction wasn't, how awful that that girl is kicked out of her home. It was, well, did you ask her why she thinks that she's attracted to women? And that didn't sit well with me. I didn't feel like that was the Christ-like response. I didn't feel the love that my mother normally shows to people in that statement. Then Shane Claiborne came and he told a personal story about someone that he knew that was gay. And Shane Claiborne is this cool, with it, evangelical person. And I was like, well, if he can love gay people, then maybe it's not that bad. And then flash forward to me hearing my pastor saying that it's not impossible to be gay and Christian at the same time. And for me, it was a radical idea. How could that be possible? It is interesting, but these personal experiences are what really made it for me. If you ask someone to explain what faith is, they don't tell you a scientific definition or tell you what Webster's dictionary says. They tell you about their life. I almost died and I'm still alive. I know God is real. No one can reach up and grab God and show you, look it, here's a piece of God's tunic. It's their personal journey. And I think when we share all of these personal stories, when we share how the wind and trees and how waterfalls and streams and rivers and oceans and white sand bring us peace, it translates. And eventually it brings peace in a lot of difficult situations. When I think about, aha, we should be doing more of that, I think it's the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Right after apartheid had ended, Nelson Mandela is elected president of South Africa, and all of the people that had been in the majority, the Boers, they had been ruling over these Africans with an iron fist, and their fear was, oh no, the black people are in the majority. They have control of the army. They're going to kill us. They're going to want revenge. And Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu get this crazy idea, well, let's share our stories and that will bring peace. So there's this giant tribunal, all of these people crammed into courthouses, and people bring forward their stories. And their stories are brought to the people that have done them wrong. A mother talks to a soldier that shot her son. The woman that was raped by the military brings it in front of the military's mind. You raped me because I was a black woman and could not defend myself. And the way that they ended each and every confession was, I forgive you. And for me, that is justice. Bringing forward your complaint, airing your grievance, and having the other side hear it and see how they've harmed you. And see, oh no, I've truly done something wrong, and repenting in their hearts of what they've done wrong. And then people reconciling and walking out together, holding hands, hugging each other, because they realize you're not black and I'm not white. We're both people, and we're both made in the image of God. And there's something beautiful in you and in me, and we mess up and we're stupid, but there is beauty in reconciliation that can't really be explained. Having a cup that overflows is just an amazing image to me. It never runneth dry. Drink from the well that doesn't run dry. There's just so much imagery in the Bible of peaceful situations, and I love it. There's violence. Oh, is there violence? And there's a lot of hate and bigotry worded within it. But that's not what the Bible's focus is. The balance comes. You see these peaceful images. They that live by the sword will die by the sword. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, which means you don't work about, you don't deal with that. Now, let me take care of it. You have peace. And the bitterness that we allow ourselves to fill up, I need to get revenge. So-and-so stole my Snicker bar. I'm going to go beat them up. Well, don't worry. I'll take care of it, says God. You just go on about your life. You continue to have peace. Don't let them push you here or push you there. Blessed are the peacemakers. They shall be called sons of God. Or children. I'll use children. I'll be way more inclusive. They shall be called children of God. I love it. It's just, that's where I find my peace, in the Bible, of all places. If I could share with the world my thoughts on peace, I'd take them on a little detour first, because you can't just outright say, here's a trick, here's how you get peace. So people don't want to hear that. They do want to hear 5 easy steps, or if you buy this pill, peace will happen. The trick to peace is remembering that everything is sacred, everything is holy, everything is filled with the very essence of awesomeness. People that aren't religious will say everything is important. It's also, everything is mysterious. We think that we can understand trees and understand this and understand that, but for the most part, we still are very much in the dark. We know that the universe is expanding. We don't know when it'll stop. We know that stars are millions and millions of miles away, and dark matter is somewhere and it's doing something, and black holes can swallow planets, but we don't know. A black hole could pop up out of our sun at any moment. We really can't predict as much as we think we can. And so for me, peace comes in the moment. You can't work forward to it too much. You have to work at it. But you have to work at it now. I'm going to start being more peaceful tomorrow. No, you need to start now. You don't know what's happening tomorrow. You have to start now because your neighbor is holy and sacred, and they need you to be peaceful now. They can't have you being crazy and flying off the handle. We need to be at peace with nature now. We can't keep using gasoline as much as we are and have the earth survive. We can't keep chopping down trees. We need to be at peace with We need to be at peace with the earth. And especially in America, I think we forget that people in other countries are just as valuable as Americans. Oh, we lost 5,000 soldiers in Iraq. Well, Iraqis lost hundreds of thousands. How can you be at peace mourning the loss of 5,000 or the two towers? We lost, what, a little under 3,000? And the war on terrorists killed over 1 million. Those people are just as valuable. If I recall correctly, in the Bible, just a few chapters after gay people are condemned and thrown to death, there's something that God tells Moses to do. When he's blessing the children of Israel, he tells him to use a certain phrase. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and grant you peace. I think that's how it goes, I'm pretty sure. And I find it interesting that that's the way that Moses is supposed to leave the people. No matter what he says to them, that's his commandment. Thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do this. The Lord grant you peace. I find it interesting that God's signature is the word peace. Shalom. I find it's hello, it's goodbye. It's peace. Peace when you come, peace when you go. That's the way that God wanted to be known. And I think there's something that humanity could stand to learn from that. We should be granting each other peace.